So, hey, it's Peter. You are listening to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. This is part two of two with Matt Biggs. If you haven't heard part one, go back not last week, but the week beforehand. Listen to that back here, and this one will play from this point. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
I get what you're saying about the financial side, where one supports the other, and the Royal Horticultural Society is a charity, I should add. However, when you do a little bit of a rebrand, I say a rebrand over an elongated period of time in their case, the truth of it is, and let's be very frank about this, when I speak with Rose B. Morton, wonderful flower grower, next week, she'll be between your episode and the next episode, for those of you listening at home. When I speak to Ed Burnham, who built the RHS Cardiff Garden for Perennial and myself as designer, when I look at Ed's Twitter bio, when I look at my Twitter bio, when I look at Rose B. Morton as a flower grower, we all have in big shining lights that we are RHS medal winners there. It hasn't lost that Liam Brady FA Cup 1980, maybe not the 1981, but the 1979 one, which we did win. We all still have that emblazoned on our breast pocket and are so extremely proud of it. It hasn't lost that childlike thing that once you get that medal, once you hold that trophy, that medal, I say, it's actually a piece of card. In all of the things it's done, it still holds something that you want to strive for and to reach as a career sort of goal, Matt.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, to be allied and associated with the Royal Horticultural Society has considerable cachet, and for the nursery people in the Grand Pavilion at Chelsea, or the show garden creators like yourself at the shows, wherever it may be, to be able to put as an endorsement of your skills, you know, RHS medal winner, has considerable cachet, and it endorses your skills, and so you do benefit from it. In fact, when I first started getting involved with the judging, you know, I felt, you know, I'm self-employed like you are, and I thought I was at a time of life where it would help to be associated with an organization like that, because it endorses you as an individual. If you are acceptable to the Royal Horticultural Society and the standards that they aspire to and also achieve, then you're not going to be too bad a bloke, and your landscapes are going to be, you know, good, and your designs are going to be good. So I think lots and lots of people really benefit from being associated, you know, being associated with that organisation, because it is, you know, so august. And you think about, you know, Chelsea gold medal, you know, winners. Even though all the shows are equal, you know, some are more equal than others, and the Chelsea Flower Show, because of its location, its history, its you know, the prestige that goes with it, a Chelsea gold still has more weight to it than, you know, one as any other show, and those other shows have got a lot of weight anyway. So, you know, it's I guess the Chelsea gold is, I suppose, for a designer or for a nursery owner, the RHS Best in Show would be the, you know, the one to get from Chelsea. So RHS Best in Show at Chelsea would, you know, see you right for the rest of your career almost. A gold medal at Chelsea, either for a nursery person or a landscape designer, would be good. And all of these allow them to benefit. You know, you can, if you're an RHS gold medal winner at Chelsea, you know, you can knock up your fees a bit.
Well, as one person said to me, you win Chelsea Gold or Best in Show on Main Avenue and you may as well just retire. Let me take it a slight bit of a different way here, Matt, just for a moment. And this is even greater controversy, and we'll get back to RHS Best in Shows and controversy there in just a little for a minute. RHS ambassadors, Alan Titchmarsh, Jamie Butterworth, Greenfinger George. We have a delightful lady, Mary Berry, who likes to bake cakes, and people scratch their heads and say, why Mary? Why not Peter Donegan? What was happening behind the scenes, Matt, with my nomination and it actually being accepted?
I don't know how the ambassadors are chosen. I mean, it's it appears from looking at the list of names, and when they are included in the book, the role of ambassador, is that they are people with a high profile that they believe will appeal to certain groups of people. And Mary Berry's got a lovely vegetable garden in her home, which I'd love to see one day. But she's a keen vegetable gardener. And, you know, she is she is a national treasure, really. And Alan Titchmarsh, he's just had his 70th birthday. He'll soon be regarded as a national treasure. These people carry weight in society, and to be labelled as an ambassador and to work for them, people like, you know, James Wong, Adam Frost, you know, they are trying to take people, I believe, with a profile that appeal to a particular age group, social group, if you like, and use their status to help the RHS. So, you know, Matt Biggs isn't an official ambassador, but, you know, now I am an unofficial ambassador because I've written the book and I will support them. So I think, you know, if you feel strongly about what the RHS does, you don't necessarily need a label. If you feel strongly, you tell people. But I do think it's people that, you know, Titchmarsh, he's got a profile. You know, people, like you say, Mary Berry Cakes, yeah, but she's got a lovely veg garden and people take notice of her. And that the RHS uses people of profile, I believe. They look at them and they go, well, this person appeals to this group of people. This person appeals, you know, we want some young people, so let's get Green Finger George in. You know, Jamie Butterworth, you know, he's a professional horticulturist, you know, nice guy. He will appeal to his age group. You know, James Wong appeals to perhaps the, you know, the hipsters, the more trendy, the foodie, the scientists. So they've got Adam Frost, is, you know, Jack the Lad. He can go and talk to anybody and appeal to, again, a different group. And all those individuals appeal to different groups. And I think this idea of ambassadors really is just labelling the people who are going to communicate positive things and give a positive brand image, I think, to the society. And of the society to the rest of the world. You're Dale Cumpeter, don't you worry about it, mate. It'll come along one day.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Matt, I have a great body. I mean, I might have legs like a turkey, but a great body nonetheless. I'm superbly intelligent. Why any woman would want to not ask me out for dinner or to a nightclub or a dance club, I'm unsure what the technical term for it is nowadays. I'd like to think that I appeal to an audience, Matt. It might be a very small audience, numbers less than one. I'm thinking I might have to slip you a tenner and you could have a word with Sue for me.
Yeah, no, I think the thing is, you just see yourself, mate, because the thing is, if you think about it, you're not officially an ambassador. You know, I've not said, Pete, you know, I'm going to give you a label and call you, you know, an ambassador, but you are an ambassador for horticulture through your podcast. You allow people like myself to have a voice, you know, to speak about horticulture. All the different people that you interview, you're allowing them a platform to broadcast about horticulture. So you are an ambassador for horticulture. And I think it's really important, the work that you do. You know, the podcasts are, like you were saying earlier on, Peter, they're quite a new invention. But those who take up the baton and deliver the messages, then, you know, you're all really important. So I don't think you necessarily need a label. You're doing it, you know, unofficially, really. You're doing it unofficially. And I'm sure, you know, if you'd like recognition, just so you've got a stamp, if you like, then I'm sure your day will come. You never know. But I also know that you will carry on doing it regardless, because you're not just doing it for the label.
Well, as a guy who entered horticultural competitions when I was 6 years of age, and I think I'll change my Twitter bio to Matt Big Says I'm an Unofficial Ambassador, and we'll settle for that. Matt, talk to me just briefly, if you could. There's obviously been a plan or a plan put in place, as you said, by visionaries of people behind the scenes, where you take on a Matthew Potash, a Ben Brace, a Chris Young, an Isabel Coulter, etc., etc. The list of names would go on in the various roles, and that they seem to be of a certain an age so that the future is secured with an individual's plan for the next, say, 20, 30, 40 years, in the same way Arsenal have replaced, if you'll allow me to use a decent enough analogy, and fingers crossed we do okay in Europe, but an Arsene Wenger versus an Unai Emery sort of a way, and it going forward, and equally a replacement of David Dean, and maybe we should leave that one just there for the minute, says you, who are fans of Arsenal. I gather there is a plan in place for the next 20, 30, 40 years for the Royal Horticultural Society, without maybe giving me the behind the scenes that you're not allowed to do. What do you see that being, Matt, having written what I should note again is an absolutely fantastic book, A Nation in Bloom, that is available to buy now. And if it's not in your local bookstore, ask them to order it in for you. It'll be very easily done.
Yeah, I mean, from what I gather, I mean, and I was able to see their sort of 5-10 year plans, particularly for the gardens. I was allowed to see some of those, that they are, it's really, now they've set themselves on this path, it is more of the same. So there's continued development of the garden, you know, continued focusing on how the RHS can expand their services that they provide to people with various needs, to community needs and the needs of the environment. They will continue. And I think what they will also do is once they've got Bridgewater, because they still need to raise money for that. After the launch, that following day, Sue Biggs was going to be meeting people in an effort to raise funds. So they're still needing to raise funds for that garden. And I think in the long term, you know, I gather from what was said that they will then look for further gardens. But really, it's a time for establishing what they're doing in these new areas, so sort of developing and consolidating, because one of the key things is to ensure that they don't that the developments don't get away with them, you know, and they end up sort of being controlled by the momentum of the project. They've got to do it very carefully, step by step. So it's a step, consolidate, develop, and then another step, rather than just, you know, running helter-skelter out of control. One of the interesting things is that the budgeting and the finances of the RHS and any major projects actually have to go before the council. And the RHS council is made up of successful business people, established landscape designers and architects, people who will be able to look and assess what the RHS want to do. And then they will question it. They will go, well, hang on a minute, you want to do this, but you know, how are you going to finance it? How long will it take? What's your end goal? And they will be detached from the project or the idea and ask some serious and ask also the right questions about it to ensure that everything that is done is being controlled and managed properly, is for the benefit of the society, is the benefit for the benefit of its members, that it fulfills the charitable role. So everything is being done very thoughtfully and very carefully. And I was impressed with. So it's not this sort of random, let's do this, let's do that. Oh, we want, horticulture is really important for, you know, mental well-being. Okay, well, let's just go. No, it's all done in a really measured, sensible, thoughtful way. And the key thing is that it's structured. I think it's structured and considered so that the RHS doesn't land itself in financial trouble or end up going off into areas that turn out to be, you know, unprofitable and a waste of time. I have to say that having looked at the RHS, and another reason why I urge that people to buy this book, not only is it beautifully presented, I mean, the publishers did a fantastic job. The images are excellent. Jason Ingram took a lot of photographs. The quality in that book is superb. But the information which I was able to gather from all the people who are working so hard is astonishing. And I now have, I know it's not perfect, we've said this already, but I do have the utmost respect for the people who work there, for what they're trying to achieve, how they're trying to promote horticulture, and how they're trying to bring horticulture to the people for the benefit of us all. And I think that, you know, I do tip my cap to them, because it's not an easy job, because there are so many demands these days being placed on horticulture, and so many different requirements from people from different social backgrounds and groupings. And somehow they've got to keep all those people happy and keep the organization tied together and working efficiently and as effectively as possible.
I'll back that up, Matt, by saying it is a wonderfully and beautifully presented book. We spoke about this to you listening at home last year, that there were, I think, I'm open to correction, maybe Tim Hell will let me know, but two or three book interviews done on the Sod Show last year for very good reason. That's not to sound hierarchical about things, again, for you listening at home. It's more that if the book is a pile of, let's be honest about it, claptrap, I can't sell you a red herring. I don't even know if that's the right cliche, but I wouldn't and can't do that to you. I think you'd call me a charlatan or a bit of a fraud, or somebody who accepted money maybe under the counter in order to say nice things about another person, which is exactly what I was hoping Matt would do about me, but it hasn't worked out so far. But in a nutshell,
you've not paid me enough pay, so that's the trouble.
Again, says you, Matt. But it is one of those where if you picked it up and leafed through it in your local bookstore, you would not disagree. And I have to add, it is also an absolutely excellent read. There's another point in here as well I should add, and it was post RHS Cardiff, where I emailed Sue Biggs, Matt, and I said to her that from the security team to the show manager to the overall RHS show manager to the people who ran the floral marquee, the talks theatre stage, all encompassing, there was, I should add, amidst hail, rain, sleet and snow, as you would have heard on a previous episode of the Sod Show. On day two of that show, we were making snowmen out of the amount of hail that we had in Cardiff. And we were greeted every single morning with nothing but smiles. And I emailed Sue to applaud her on this one. But number two, to say that this kind of thing, it's like a hotel. It's like a football team. It's like a band. It starts at the very, very top. It works its way down to the bottom and it sort of bubbles its way back up again. And they certainly have the infrastructure in place, number one. But number two, they also have chosen the right personnel, and they certainly chose the right person, one of horticulture's happiest people. And the reason I like talking to you, Matt, more so is that we tend to have that eternal happiness of a sunshine mind meets a wonderful hobby and something that I have loved doing all my life. And that certainly does come true in that book again. Just briefly, Matt, when I noted to friends of mine that you were coming on the show and we got talking about your book and what was noted in it, something came up about garden shows, not to stick on the biggest elephant in the room, shall I call it, or as you rightly noted, one of the main funding elements of the Royal Horticultural Society as a charity, in order therefore to fund something else that they also do. But years and years and years ago, most of the RHS shows, or the greater part of them anyway, would have taken place mainly around about London. And then it was sort of shifted out of London, and so became Tatton, and so became Cardiff. And now we have former guest of the show, it's a couple of episodes ago, Ray Wilkinson was on, who will be designing at RHS Chatsworth, a new show. What's the future on the shows, Matt, number one? And number two, is it a case of that sort of knock, shall I call it a product, just for the moment, you knock one off the shelf and you add a new one in, and if it doesn't work out, that's absolutely fine, but the whole point of it is not to become stale, and that's what they've done every year, and so you keep it fresh and you keep it new and exciting and a little bit different.
Yeah, and what they do is that they have overall themes for each year, which again gives it a direction. And I think though they are, you know, fundamentally flower shows, obviously, there is a nice theme to them, and there are different ideas. So there are constant changes, because you do have a loyal following with the RHS, and people do want to see something a little different. Not entirely different, because that might not be what they've come for, but they do want to see some tweaks and changes. And in fact, when it comes to the shows, I mean, one of the more contentious things that happened was the sale of the Lawrence Hall in London. Now, those London shows, even when I was younger, they used to be there once a fortnight. It used to be the great meeting place for gardeners.
Somebody made an interesting comment to me saying that now that they don't have so many London shows because they are now moving shows out to gardens, so they're going to have, they have the Wisley show, the Rosemore show, the Hyde Hall show. Now they have flower shows there rather than in the centre of London. But somebody did say those London shows used to be the place where day-to-day people, everyday gardeners, could rub shoulders with their heroes. You know, people like Christopher Lloyd would be there and they could stop and talk to them. And he said, now we don't have the London shows as a focal point. People are now being denied that, which I thought was a very interesting and pertinent and valid comment. But economically, when you look at the numbers for the RHS shows in London at Vincent Square, you know, they would get, sort of, say, for example, over a three-day show, they might get 9,000 visitors. Well, Hyde Hall gets 9,000 visitors in a day, you know, and gets 54,000 overall. So, I mean, though it's harsh on history, and you mustn't cut yourself off from your history because it's really important and part of the, you know, the fibre, if you like, it's the bones of the RHS, is its history. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, if the economic realities of things have to guide the charity, and they are obliged to use their facilities and their opportunities in the most productive way. So really, at the end of the day, harsh though it may seem, and though indeed I and many others don't like it, the RHS shows just don't pay. They're not economic to run. The ones at the gardens are. So therefore, in this brutal modern world, I'm afraid, there's no room for sentiment. I do hope that, you know, having kept the Lindley Hall still, obviously that's there, that they will, you know, that they will think about developing some shows there. Because I went to the last Urban show because it was going to be the last the major show there. I know they had their summer launch and the spring Camellia and Orchid show there. But the one last October, which was the Urban Garden show, there was a whole set of people there, Peter, who you'd never normally see at a garden show, you know, and they were the sort of the young hipsters, the houseplant growers with their tats and their neatly trimmed beards. And it was a completely different audience, and the RHS ought to be acknowledging that audience and I believe trying to bring them into the Royal Horticultural Society. Yes, they communicate by Instagram and Twitter. They use social media to broadcast and publicise what they're doing. But, you know, they were all massively keen, and there was a lot of them there. I think to ignore them would be a travesty, to be honest with you. They're keen. They want to understand their plants even more, and they would be a massive boost of energy to the society. So I think, you know, they've got to try and do something to keep London shows going in some way, shape or form, even if it's only in one of the halls.
I'm reminded, Matt, and I'll use another Arsenal analogy, and that is when Highbury Stadium in London was sold to development, albeit parts a protected building, and to the new, now Emirates Stadium. And on one hand, I didn't want to lose that romantic idea of sitting in the clock end. At the same token, I also appreciate that the capacity of the stadium and the age of the building was sort of falling, and you do need, again, it's for the betterment of the overall institution is the wrong word, but for the overall of the family, there was a breath of fresh air required. There was a modernization to an extent required, albeit, as you rightly said, you don't want to lose that rich heritage. And we see the other London club, whose name I don't mention, have gone and done something similar again. And sometimes it just has to happen.
What do you mean, Tottenham?
I didn't want to say that name, Matt, but you know, there you go. But I was delighted to see West Ham score the first goals at their new stadium, and we'll park that ever so slightly to one side, says he, giggling. Matt, I just want to finish on this note. Five or three or some prime number, if you could, of things that the RHS may not be famed for. I say famed for, that wouldn't, not a Chelsea, so to speak, to put it in that context, that maybe you've noted in the book that you would suggest that people listening to this might turn around and go, oh my God, we should go and see that or research it or find out a little bit more of it. And equally, on the other hand, can you give me a couple of things that you know that are maybe going to happen in the future or things that you might like to see happen in there?
I think the things that people would be interested to read about, and they can get this sort of in the book, is the science. The science I found extraordinary, really, really did. Real eye-opener, really amazing, doing so much. Again, it brought home to me the importance of biosecurity and the number of pests and diseases that have come into the country that the RHS are seeking to understand and control. And I like that. The other thing was, you know, the service they provide to not just to members, but sort of on the website. You know, there are, I can't even remember what it was now, but it's something like 5 million pages of horticultural information available to everyone around the world through the internet, through the RHS. And I was staggered by the amount of horticultural information that was available. I think that sort of, you know, the new ventures and the new events, you know, when Bridgewater comes, that's going to be sensational when they first open the in the War Garden in 2020. The RHS down at Wisley have planted up most extraordinary, and it will be unbelievable when it's in full flourish, but they've got an extraordinary wisteria arch, which is got lots of different kinds of wisteria. It's almost a sort of wisteria demonstration area, so you've got all sorts of shapes and colors on the theme wisteria, and that's been planted, and the plants are being trained, so over time that will will improve. When they get the Centre of Excellence for Horticultural Science and Learning, again at Wisley, because a lot of the money is going there because it's the sort of flagship garden and the headquarters. But there you will have the Centre for Science and Learning, so you'll be able to see the scientists at work, you'll be able to watch people working in the herbarium. There will be demonstrations, it will be interactive, there will be gardens on the outside. There's going to be one garden's going to be again, thinking about health and well-being, it's going to be planted with soft colours and some with bright colours, and people will be asked to take part in research, how they respond. You know, it's going to be a lot more interactive. The RHS is going to become much more like, and we hark back to the great originator, I believe, at the Eden Project, which is another place which is absolutely extraordinary. If any of your listeners happen to, you know, be in Cornwall or heading in that direction, you know, they please put that on your list, because it is mind blowing to think of that project starting out as being an empty clay pit. That is, Tim Smith is real visionary. So all these people have inspired, I think, others, inspired the RHS. They set the standard. And so the RHS is really changing. There are lots of new ideas, lots of new projects, lots of new plantings, lots of new energy to bring it into the 21st century and to allow people to experience and enjoy their gardening to the utmost, and to prove really that gardening changes lives.
Matt Biggs, it is always a delight and a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me again. I genuinely mean it when I say it. You are everything that is wonderful about horticulture. Congratulations on your book, A Nation in Bloom, available now in all good bookstores. And thanks again. It really has. It's always a treat, Matt, to chat with you.
Well, thank you ever so much, Peter. I really appreciate your interest in the book. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Have a great day, Matt. Well, see you in the next couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, see you at Chelsea. Who have Arsenal got today?
Oh, stop. No, we played midweek. We played in Europe midweek, and thank God we won.
You won, did you? That's good. Not so. Yeah, you're doing all right.
I'm still praying, Matt, you know? I'm still praying.
I come from Leicester. I'm a fan of Leicester City, but I also like the rugby, and I went to the rugby yesterday because my favourite rugby side aren't doing too badly. My favourite football side are doing okay. That'd be interesting to see how we get on under Brendan Rodgers anyway.
To Brendan Rodgers' credit, you knocked seven shades out of the Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, Matt. So...
Oh, we did, actually. Yeah, we did. That was a surprise result. First one, Vardy scored two, didn't he, as well?
Considering we were shocking is probably a fair way to put it. I'm surprised Vardy didn't score 22.
Right. The thing is, everybody has an off day, don't they? You know, teams or whatever. I'm just pleased that Manchester United are going through a bad patch. Long may it continue.
What was the joke I heard midweek, Matt? I hope they never sell Paul Pogba. And I would fully agree with that. I hope he causes more disruption behind the scenes, and long may he stay there. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the greatest appointment they ever made. I'm delighted they did it before the end of the season and not after the season had ended. Yes.
He's a top bloke and he's got his work cut out.
That is also an understatement, but yes. Arsenal need a couple of defenders, so I shouldn't shout too loudly about how poor other teams have been playing of recent. Yeah.
No. All good fun. Yeah, it's all good fun, mate. Love it. Well, nice to chat to you. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. I'll look out for you at Chelsea.
Excellent, Matt. Pleasure as always. Yeah. Take care.
Yeah, take good care now.
Cheers. Bye. Bye-bye.